You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, what's up? I am Captain Dean, and welcome back to another episode. My guest is an amazing bassist. He is turning bright red as I'm saying all these things because he is the best bassist in Bowling Green, and he will challenge you and cut heads, and he will win. And I'm not kidding. He is the bass player for what?
I'll let Dean do the challenging.
Let me do the challenging.
Yeah.
You are the bass player for Mundane Nation, and your name is Ed Huziak. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
It is your turn, Ed. We have talked about doing this for a long time.
Yeah, it's been
a while. But I ended up interviewing Sven months ago, and you are a very busy man with work and band stuff and gigging and school, and so we nailed it. We got it. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
All right. Appreciate it, man.
So, we are here because... Oh, we are at Spencer's Coffee House, by the way. I have to always plug that. I haven't recorded here in a while, so I love doing these.
Yeah.
I have a nice iced mocha.
Yeah, as I called it.
As we are speaking, it is a hot-ass July day,
yeah.
And I need something cold. But we are at Spencer's Coffee House, and it is very calm right now. There's not a lot of activity in here, but that's good.
Ambient.
Because that means our interview is going to turn out really good. But Ed, we are here because it's your turn for the Sound Atlas and to talk about your music history, your music influences, and music all around.
Oh, yeah.
Ed, where are you from?
I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, but like my family, like I always tell people because they, first off, I don't really speak like I'm from Bowling Green. I've been living here since I was seven, but my parents are from the northern part of Ohio, almost towards like Pennsylvania.
Right, and there is a pretty, it's not a New England accent, but no, it's something.
I'm a Yankee.
In-between, though. Would that be the Mason-Dixon line kind of thing?
I'm like, it's this bastardized southern accent I throw on there just so I can sound familiar to the kinfolk.
There you go.
Yeah.
Make it relatable, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, born in Cincinnati.
Yeah,
not too far from here, obviously.
No, not too far.
When did you guys move to Bowling Green?
We moved to Bowling Green when I would have been, I think, 7 years old.
And I bet you just said that, and in the midst of this conversation, I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, that's all right. I was like, I miss it. I was like, I can't remember that.
Seven. So that's not, what were we looking at? That's about 15 years ago.
About 15 years, yeah.
Okay. So you pretty much lived here your whole life. Cincinnati's just the birthplace.
Yeah, birthplace.
But again, it's a very close. I love Cincinnati. I love going up there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I have a lot of friends up there, actually. But when you came to Bowling Green, you were about seven. I know this is interesting because without your brother here, I'm going to get your side of the story. But you and your brother, Ben, are incredible musicians, and obviously anyone that has seen Mundane Nation knows this, and they know that I'm not lying about this, but you guys as brothers, and I have a brother too, so musically we can read each other's minds, we know what the other's gonna do. I know how that works.
Exactly.
So I loved playing drums with you guys a few times because I know that's
coming.
You see
the glue.
I know how it works. So
I always tell people, it's like you see the glue. Some bands are up on stage and you're like, oh yeah, they work well together. But when there's brothers on stage, there's always a connection. I remember when I was a real little kid, I would have been probably 10 years old. We went to see a band that was playing in Bowling Green. I think they were called the Rebellion or something. Revolution. The Revolution was what it was. And it was a brother on keyboards and then a brother playing bass. And my dad from the crowd called that those guys were brothers just based on how they were looking at each other on a stage. It's like half pissed off and half you understand more about that person than anybody, right?
Perfect way to put it in. But the thing about you guys is the fact that you are brothers, but Ben's not here. Obviously, there's a strong connection there, musically speaking. And coming together, did you all, when you discovered music, was it a partnership thing, or did you both kind of do your own thing and come together at the same time?
Well, it was more of what initially got us into music was the neighborhood kid. We were all skateboarders and just outside all day, you know, tan as can be, hanging right. out. And then we were like, you know what, rock and roll music is cool. We listen to a bunch of punk rock. Like, we listen to The Offspring. We would listen to just, you know, old school mixtapes that we'd find in Will's
old
basement.
School to you is very modern and new to me.
Oh, but that's not... No, I don't mean, like, The Offspring is old school, but, like, Dead Kennedys, stuff like that would come up in the mix.
And again, I've had this conversation with a lot of people of how... music and skateboarding and
it's
those
all
worlds are very much a part of each other.
But when we were kids, we were doing that, and then the
but
neighbor...
Kid-wise, like age-wise, what are you talking about?
I would have been... I first started playing music, not just bass, but just like fiddling with it. Not like I never considered myself like a musician at the time, but I would have been like 8 years old or around that age when I was first picking it up.
When you moved here, it kind of...
But it wasn't...
Really like, recent.
I always kind of preface it because it was like the neighbor's guitar, and it was... He was down the street. Right. We would hang out, and we'd go over there, and he was taking lessons and learning from people, but we were just going over there, and we're like, you know what? That's pretty cool. We're going to start a band. And my brother's like, okay... So
I mean, it happened when you not long after you moved here.
Yeah, it was,
and you were really young
because it was just a kid we met down the street who we
there's
got
always
into
that one kid
with.
Down the street.
Like we had, I think it was funny because like we were kind of the last generation that didn't have like phones,
right?
Growing up, like I didn't get a cell phone until like I would have been in middle school, and that one was like one of the flip out construction phones you can call
very
mom
ancient.
On. Yeah. It's like you could have thrown that thing down the street as hard as you wanted. It wouldn't even get a scratch. But we were skateboarding as kids at the time, and he got that guitar, and we would just go over there, and we're like, we're going to start a band. So Ben's like, all right, I'm going to learn how to play guitar. I'll play lead guitar. Will be the singer and the guitar. Well, we didn't want to have a singer. We're like, we're going to be an instrumental group.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and it was just bad.
It's easier.
Like, it was like... It was like really bad knockoff Green Day, but it was just a good spot for us to learn how to play music.
That's a great starting point.
Yeah, I'm like...
Because good, simple, to-the-point kind of music like that. Green Day, especially early Green Day. Yeah, it has structure, but it's also very simple.
Yeah, it's
three,
easy
four chords,
for beginners
you know what
to
I mean?
Play.
But it's got power, it's got energy.
Yeah.
So if you can play three chords with heart and you know, really... thick and heavy, you know, laying it down, it's real, you know.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
But we were getting into that, and naturally as the younger brother I was like, all right, I'm stuck on bass, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna be the bass player. It's hard to like convince yourself that, right. And I'm like a 10-year-old kid. I was the shortest kid in class, like as small as you can be. So every picture of me with a bass has that thing just towering out as wide, like way wider than I was tall. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and I've heard this story from Dave Allen, who you took lessons from.
Yeah, Dave's
and Dave
got that.
Has an episode of the Sound Atlas too. But he talks about when he met you, like you were getting lessons from somebody, but then that person moved, I think, and your mom contacted Dave Allen about lessons, and he was kind of on the fence about it. But then she sent him a video. And he said that this little kid with a bass that was bigger than him walks on stage at a school talent show and just tore it apart with slap stuff. And
it was like
just
playing
bass. Like
I would have that
on
one,
the fly.
The video he's talking about, I would have been in fifth grade, and I'm just like this little kid in like a fleece jacket, bright blue like grandpa jeans for some reason, and I'm down there just slapping a bass, like throwing in like Red Hot Chili Peppers licks, Cream.
That's pretty amazing, though.
Different. Stuff. Yeah.
The generation you're from, and to be a bass player and to be doing that, you know what I mean? Chili Peppers and Cream. Like, who does
that's my
I
parents.
Don't know anybody.
That's my parents. Well, it just, my dad had a huge number of CDs in the basement, like just as many as you could find from.
So he was like the ultimate, radio station.
Ultimate
level.
Collector of music. And my dad is, I would say he's a great curator of music.
Right.
Like he always had good taste, and he could always listen to something and find what he liked in it. But it didn't necessarily sell it. But he'd buy those albums and just hang on to them. And
that's
I was
great.
Lucky when I was a kid to have that kind of exposure and to be able to listen to that music.
And you both were
Because this was just like a little bit prior to like kids having iPhones and all
right.
that kind of stuff. So
again, like
the
you
internet
said, you
was
were kind
getting
of,
there. Like,
yeah,
we had a computer in our house, but it was
kind
of off
limits. Generation before the takeover.
Yeah, like my parents, like the computers were mostly for my parents. They didn't want to just see you on the computer.
Right.
You go outside, you go do things.
Right.
Right. So just stumbling upon those records, like I remember being like probably 9 years old and we found 10 in the basement, Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, this song's on Guitar Hero because Even Flow is on Guitar Hero. And we're like, okay, we're going to listen to this whole thing. And we were just like, this is great. Like, yeah. Why aren't all these songs on Guitar Hero?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was.
And see,
it was
that's a weird thing to hear from how you discovered it. I discovered it because I was alive.
When it was coming out.
When it came out, yeah. You know, and I'll never, ever forget the first time I ever heard Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
It wasn't Pearl Jam, it was Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah.
And it was like a demo was being circulated around of Alive, and I guess Even Flow was on it or something. But yeah, I had a rare import deal or something
cool.
of that nature. But yeah, that was good stuff. But to answer a whole big blob of questions all
yeah,
at once, basically.
All.
You and your brother discovered it at the same time and got bit by the bug really young, not long after you had moved here.
Oh, yeah. I think, well, we were just obsessive kids. Like,
right.
We were those kids, like, my parents would be like, all right, go outside, go play, go do whatever. So it was really like, unless we were going somewhere and they needed us,
right.
We were given to our own devices, and we didn't have like lessons for the first 2 years we played. Like we didn't,
which is a good thing.
We didn't get instruments for like a year after we told my parents that we loved it. We were down
right.
there playing on Will's guitar
right.
and doing that because my
but
mom was just like,
me,
I don't want to buy a guitar and have it
right.
sit in the closet.
I think the smart move is always to test the grounds.
Test the waters.
Like
yeah.
what I did is I had access to music stores. We could go into music stores and tinker on the stuff on the floor. Or like you, I had a couple of friends like
that had
instruments, like real guitars that I got to play on and stuff. And it's a whole different world to piddle on someone's acoustic as opposed to plugging in an
yeah.
actual electric into an amp. And
well, he had an electric, but he had one of those like pocket amps.
Oh, the
those
little,
ones that strapped to your belt.
Was it like just, a pig nose?
Yeah,
or?
And it had two channels. It was clean and fuzz,
yeah.
but the real channel was fuzz and garbage.
Yeah,
like you couldn't hear anything.
Oh,
no,
you
it's
could
so
amplify
funny.
A fart with it.
Yeah, but it, I was like, it's a great thing to learn TNT on. You
of
know,
of course,
and that's what I mean.
Well, it's just good to learn on in general.
Yeah,
but you know
I
what's interesting about this is that you are a child of the 90s.
Yeah, 98.
That's crazy. And you are telling a musical upbringing as the same as someone like me.
Yeah.
I'm a child of the late 70s, early 80s, and you just described pretty much on point the way we grew up. But
yeah,
yet,
it's got that-
you were that generation that kind of had other ways, but yet you all
music,
did it
yeah.
old school, old fashioned way of learning how to play
we
music.
Did it well we did it both. I think that was the interesting thing about it. Like we would go down the street and Will had computers and stuff, so we would look up songs with him, but then it would be like, hey, we have to compete, and he'd find this great song, so we'd go digging through my dad's music, and you'd come up with like Stevie Ray Vaughan,
right.
Hendrix, and
so
you
it was kind of two
yeah.
worlds meeting.
And like when we first got into music, it wasn't like we were just into the stuff we're really into now. Like a lot of that stuff was based in the blues. We learned playing the blues, and
right.
just,
and yeah. that leads me to this. At a young age, I'm pretty sure I'm right. I always say that, then I'm always wrong. You guys started attending the Teen Jam.
Yeah.
At, I guess at the time would have been at Wawa's Steakhouse, where the Blues Kentucky Blues Society Blues Jam was at Wawa for a long time, and they started a Teen Jam. Now I'm assuming you all were a part of that because I know Sven said that he was a part of that.
Yeah, we were. It was kind of interesting. I think the Teen Jams had started just a little bit earlier with Zach Smith. And we had gone, it was just like my mom had found, I think it maybe it was through Greg Williams or somebody like
right.
that, who she had just met through like Dave Allen and all those people we had taken lessons
right.
from growing up, that they had this thing going on, and my mom was like, all right, we'll go down there. And Ben and I were like, all right, we'll go. We're like, it's kind of lame. We don't want to spend our Tuesday night or whatever. I think it was on a Monday for a while. And we're like, okay. And we go down there, and it's Ben and I. And we show up, and I'm midget little kid, like tiny. And Ben is a tiny little kid. Like, we both just look like we're like, I look like I'm 5, and Ben looks like he's like 8, even though he's like 12, and I'm like 12.
You know
12
what?
And
when you're
14.
60, you'll appreciate
that. Yeah. And that's why I'm like, we got the young bone structure.
Yeah.
But we're up there, and we walk up, and it's like Troy running sound.
Right.
You know Troy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's running sound, and we go up there, and we're like, yeah, we want to play. And he's like, okay. And he's like, I'll get up there and play drums for these kids. Or somebody in the crowd comes up and plays mm-hmm. drums. And we start in there, and he's like, what do you want to play? And we're like, okay, we're going to play Voodoo Child. And Ben is like this 12-year-old kid, I'm probably like 11 or something, and he gets up there and he is just ripping guitar solos.
He actually had Hendrix licks down.
Yeah, Hendrix licks, and you just see people over at the bar just like turning their head, and they're like, what is this like tiny little bug of a person playing these huge blues licks in the middle of this place? And then we go into like Stevie Ray Vaughan, and we're playing like Born Under a Bad Sign, Jimi Hendrix version, and we just go down there and do this stuff, and we just... It's stuff we had been playing in the basement, just the two of us, for years. We didn't have anybody else.
But this was your opportunity to get onto a stage.
Yeah. And that was...
Like, not school, not talent shows, but like a real bar, a venue, a stage.
And it's funny because when I was like young like that, I didn't think anything of it. And now I'm like, it's really lucky to get that opportunity to do that when you're young. And I think that's one of the things that was kind of fundamental in our sound with Mundane Nation is we had years and years of playing with Sven, even. We're like, we've been a band for like 10 years at this point.
Right.
And
I know, that's pretty remarkable.
But we got to do it in an atmosphere that was super supportive because we were kids. Nobody's going to boo kids up on a stage who are figuring themselves out.
That's true, but you all really had obviously raw talent that wasn't like... It wasn't shitty.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I think
like
people
times,
recognize that.
There were times that we did things that we thought were shitty, and we got to learn on a good curve. It wasn't like, I think about it now, where if you post a video to the internet, a kid playing a guitar, there's going to be some dude at the bottom who's just like, this kid fucking sucks. My band's awesome. Like, but we got to grow up in this age where we got to go out and play live, and we did have a little bit of talent, so people weren't just like, ooh, let me plug my ears and bear through this.
Right.
But at the same time, when we made those mistakes and we were figuring ourselves out, we got to watch the crowd reaction, and it was like, oh, that didn't work, or ooh, that was really cool. Like, Grain was a song
just part of the growing
process.
Yeah,
Grain was a song that ended up on the album, and we wrote it when I was 12 years old, and we played it at Wawa's Teen Jam.
That's
and
crazy.
People, like, we would play that, and we'd go there every week, and pretty soon you saw people in the crowd singing along with it, like they knew the song. And I'm like, it's kind of crazy we got to do that, and to do that when you're 12 years old is insane.
That's great, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hell of a story to have.
Like,
a great upbringing in music. But that really puts a giant pinpoint on your upbringing, the music that was involved in it, the music that you and your brother Ben were into, which, again, having a partner in this had to be a big help. I can't imagine being alone.
Yeah,
and you know that's how everybody ends up playing Wonderwall on acoustic guitar. They don't have a brother or
because you can
sort of,
think you're the shit. I'm like the best thing that you can have when you're growing up is that brother who's yelling at you that you're not playing on time, and you're both arguing back and forth about who's off. But at the end of it, you find communication. You find what works, so you learn how to play with other people.
Yeah.
I think like one of the biggest things we get as like compliments from the older guys we played with, like Dean, like you and
I'm
Jake.
Old.
Yeah, like the guy, like older guys. I'm not gonna
no,
say.
I know,
yeah,
I know.
You get me.
I don't care.
The big thing they always tell us is, or that we get, is that we communicate well on stage for a band. And most people our age, I played with them. They don't.
Here's what I think. I think what you all went through as kids is what a lot of people, including myself, went through in our 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like you're almost a decade ahead of avoiding all the pitfalls and yeah. and bad decision making that a lot of us guys did. But we didn't have, a lot of us, including me, I would say didn't have the support system that maybe you all did. Not only family speaking, but you all had a lot of connections through those Teen Jam things because you met kids your age. And I could make a list of yeah. a lot of them That's that I know that went there that are involved in the scene today.
Mm-hmm.
And you all kind of came together
like Kendrick,
or went through it. Yeah,
Kendrick, our original drummer for the first band we had with Sven when we were kids, which mm-hmm. was called The Facient.
Yeah.
Which isn't a real word, and they used to change the name and then argue about it on Facebook, and it was hilarious. But Kendrick now plays in Dan Luke and the Raid.
Yep.
And you get to see, it's kind of neat where you get
it's
to
amazing.
See these guys you used to play with, and you have all these stories about where they're like 12 years old,
yeah.
and then they grow up, and you see what they did. I got to watch their video recently.
It really
it cool.
puts a highlight, and I think a lot of us need to give a big thanks to Kenny Lee
yeah.
and Greg Williams for what
huge,
they did, because
huge
it was like the moment in time that they did that was when all of you guys were kids, and it captured it perfectly
yeah.
for all of you. And now look at where you guys are.
It,
you know
what I think it did was it brought those kids who had that gravitation towards music.
Mm-hmm.
And you would, there were some kids who would go to Teen Jam and they'd play twice and then they wouldn't be back.
Right.
Or they would come and they would talk about playing and wouldn't play because they hadn't learned anything new.
Right.
And but you got to go there and people were always out to support you, even if it was just the other like 1,000 kids who were showing up for Teen
right.
Jam. So you always felt like there was a support
yeah.
around you for what you were doing, even if it wasn't huge.
You and gotta admit, and that's
better than most people get
yeah.
when they're in their 20s and playing bars.
Right.
And I'm like, it's a good environment for people to
yeah.
be able to grow and learn as
but
musicians.
The Kentucky Blues Society has been going for a long time now. You guys got to be a part of something at a pretty perfect time
yeah.
of that moment in time for our music scene. But to this day, as we speak, they still have the Kentucky Blues Jam.
Yeah.
It's at the Ramada mm-hmm. on Scottsville Road in Bowling Green, and every Sunday, and it's all ages. So
yeah.
it's open to the public, and the few times I've been recently, there are some kids that come in that
yeah.
are like 12, 13 years old.
And I think
and they impress me. I mean,
yeah.
it's like the same thing. You know,
I think it's better.
Here I am up there playing drums with this kid that's struggling to get through playing something, Red House.
Yeah.
But he does it.
Yeah.
And he does it with a smile on his face.
Everybody loves it.
And he grins and rolls his eyes at the mistakes because he knows. Because
he knows. And
but he also
that,
knows.
You get to
he's
see
like,
that
you know
light
what?
In a kid.
This is part of it.
You get to see that like that glint when they're like, oh, I messed that up.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like it did on the
right.
record when I was trying
gotta,
to play it.
Gotta mimic the
like,
record.
Yeah, it's cool, though. And like you go back and watch those videos of us playing, and you'll see us playing something like so up-tempo. It's insane. And we're just laughing. Like there's this video of us when we were in La Garage, which was my like first band with a drummer that we played out live at Wabaz and all of that.
Right.
And we're playing what's the song? The Ocean by Led Zeppelin.
Good Lord.
Yeah, but we didn't have a singer at the time, so it's not like super impressive.
Super
it's
awesome instrumental version
yeah.
of The Ocean.
But well, it would have been. And then we got nervous beforehand because we're like, oh, man, this is a Led Zeppelin tune.
Right.
So we get up there, and we are just ripping on it, going as fast as you can possibly play
Damn.
The Ocean.
It turns into the Red Skeleton.
Yeah. I was like, pretty soon, I was like, I couldn't tell it from Ace of Spades. I was
oh,
like,
wow.
It could have ended in the same key.
Well, you know, your kids. You could have been out playing Pokemon.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or something. But you were playing Led Zeppelin.
We
so
were
good
bit
for you.
By the bug, man.
You
like,
were.
My
and
mom,
it's a cool, again, like to wrap all that up, to the involvement that you all had in Kentucky Blues Jams and the Teen Jams, and it helped spawn not only you guys, but so many others out there that are still in it to this day.
Yeah.
And hats off to those guys for giving you the
well.
Opportunity.
And I was like, we even got to play with the older musicians. We would go there on the blues nights, too, because they would see us play at Teen Jam. They'd be right. like, I kind of want to play with that kid and see what he's
got. What I like about those is it's almost like age disappears.
Yeah, it's all about
like
music.
Because I'll get
it's
up
like
there and play drums.
Program.
I'm 40. The bass player might be 60. The guitar player might be 25. I mean, it's really neat.
It's almost like a mentorship program at some point. Being on stage, and Kenny would come up on stage and play with us, and he would be like, all right, we would be jamming on an old blues tune, and I don't know, like, all of the old blues.
Of course.
I was mostly, like, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Like the edge of
which I don't call blues at all.
Yeah, I'm like it's like Texas blues, the newer end of it.
Skiffle.
Yeah, but that was the stuff. I just love like those live performing bands and blues influences like Led Zeppelin. So we were eaten up by that, but we'd be up on stage and Kenny would be like, "Slow down, it's the blues, damn it!" Like, and I'm like, "That's every kid." And there's something about that though.
Yep. But that definitely shaped you guys, and I think it's a cool thing to have.
Yeah.
And real quick, again, before we get launching into more and more modern day stuff, your brother studied with Bobby Baldwin.
Yeah. Like,
and you took bass lessons from Dave Allen, which we know, and Dave tells a wonderful story about that. but who was the teacher before Dave that you got with?
Before Dave, I worked with Doug Littlejohn.
I was going to say it was Littlejohn, right?
Yeah, it was. I think.
Now, these guys didn't really have to teach you a lot. They just kind of helped guide you. I don't know about Doug, but I know Dave is like. They kind of already had what they needed, but they kind of just more or less was like. Like, well,
just pointing it out.
Yeah, I got paid to do this, so I might as well teach them something.
Yeah,
but I think they would both say in your term. I know Dave would agree that you already had it. He didn't have to do a whole lot. He may have just given you a lot of pointers and guidance, but he didn't really have to say do this and do it this way. Like. You're a really fast learner. You're a watch and learn kind of guy.
Yeah,
you take what you learn, and then you immediately turn around and start doing a ton of things around it. So it's like you get the bare bone basics.
I was interested in
you go
the music
way
around it.
Yeah,
like even I don't know why. Like I don't think there's something to arrogance. I guess. When I was a kid, I just always assumed that I was going to write great music.
Yeah.
So I'm like, when I would find something.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I thought, I was like, I wanted to do that. That was like the passion in me. And so I would find something that I thought was interesting. I would hear something. And I'm like, that's great. I remember when we got a Red Hot Chili Peppers Greatest Hits album, and I was like, I have to learn.
There's
everything
a lot of those.
It.
So which one was it?
It's
the early years or the Frusciante years?
It is like I think it's later year stuff or
hits?
It's Frusciante stuff for the most part.
Well, I know there's one where it's got the early years and then Mother's Milk. And then there's other greatest hits that
it's
have kind of everything up to Californication and stuff
it's,
like that.
It's up to that.
Okay.
So, but I also
depends
had like
depends on
one
which
hot
label
minute.
It is.
Like One Hot Minute was probably my favorite album when I was like 10 years old.
See,
I listened to it on repeat.
When that record came out, it freaked
people
a lot of us
it,
out.
Yeah.
No, it freaked a lot of us out, but I was a huge Jane's Addiction fan.
Yeah, that's what
so
I about.
Thought. The first time I saw Navarro with him was at Woodstock, and I was just like, okay, I miss John, but damn,
that's cool. Yeah.
And they played Aeroplane and Warped at Woodstock long before the record came out. So we heard those two songs and was like, okay, I can hang with this. But a lot of people I knew were like, no, I can't. He's not funky enough. He can't do it. And I was like, man.
It's not funky
when that
enough.
Record came out, though, round,
go listen to Coffee
Walkabout,
Shop.
And
go,
there's a lot of
I'm
songs
like, and
on
go listen to
stuff.
Coffee Shop. It might be power metal funk, but it is driving.
It's like a goofy Iggy Pop song, but it's their way of doing it.
It's a great
album. Like, as a drummer at the time, mainly, I thought Walkabout was impressive. Like,
great
the way
song,
they play
yeah.
that thing and that little rhythm. But I'm with you on that. I love One Hot Minute. A lot of people don't.
Yeah, I think it's great.
I do. I'm a full Red Hot Chili Pepper fan.
That's why we can jam with you, man. That's why it works. It's because you
get
like
it.
That album.
I get it.
No, but I was when I was a kid, I would go down in the basement before school every morning and play.
Give me details on this. You said your father had a massive record collection.
Yeah,
CDs, records, what? CDs. Just kind of all of it?
CDs. My parents still say vinyl is garbage, and they're like, if you grew up in the era of vinyl, you're like, this is garbage, let's listen to the good media.
I get the difference in sound. But
I like vinyl.
I like the the clarity of what CDs do is pretty good, but
I like
vinyl on a good system is usually pretty good.
I like vinyl because it makes the instrumental parts more distinct, I feel like.
I feel like that.
I feel like it separates the tracks.
Especially if it's like analog recordings.
And then Ben tells me I'm an idiot.
Tube amps
and he's
and
like,
stuff.
Just adjust your EQ so that. And I'm like, no, man.
You know what? Everybody's ears are different.
I also like it because, and I've come to appreciate it as I get older, I think that vinyl was the last form of music where people sat down and focused on the music alone.
True.
Like that was the, like, it's like how we think of like Netflix today. Like you sit down and you binge watch Netflix.
Yeah.
And that's what music probably was for people growing up. Like, that's how my dad describes growing up. He's like, you would sit in your room with headphones and listen to an album all
you
the way over.
You would save up
and
money
look at the cover.
To buy one that one record you wanted, and it was like owning a special edition. You know, like, it was it was important.
It mattered to you.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think as music becomes more available, some of that value has been lost. Where
people
can find a thousand.
They don't hold it in their hand. They don't look at the artwork.
Yeah, I can find a thousand songs in a day I like.
Like, I love opening the sleeve and reading where it was recorded, who engineered it.
And
like,
I always
love that shit.
Yeah, but like my favorite, when I was, so I would have been a real young kid, and I would listen to these albums, and I would go down there before school, and my mom would, like, still be in bed, and she's yelling down at the basement for me to stop playing occasionally, because it would be the garbage stuff. But I was just bitten by it. I would play for, like, 2 hours before I would go to school, and then I would come home from school and do the same. And then we still went outside, and we'd go, and we had other interests. Like, I competed in athletics and stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah, let's touch on this real quick.
Yeah, because Sven misspoke about some information.
I think so, but your father is is it pole vaulting?
Pole vaulting,
okay.
Yeah.
You and your brother, Ben, both held the state record.
We both won a state title. So
you
we both
won a
state
title.
In the
title.
State championship and won it. I won two of them. Ben won one.
So
I like to hold that over.
Okay. And you hold the state record?
No.
No.
That's where Sven misspoke.
Okay.
He just like, I gray out that area from when we were kids. And you
so
guys
you just,
couldn't
you
make
won,
band practice.
You won a competition. Not necessarily earning some sort of the highest jump.
No, I didn't break any.
Okay.
I didn't break any record. Like, I held the school record because I was at a relatively new school.
That's cool.
And I still
you
do.
You all went to South
Warren. For a while, but.
Right?
I went to South Warren.
There you go. Represent.
Yeah. there you go. All you South Warren graduates who are listening to this.
All you Spartans.
Yeah.
Go Spartans.
But we competed in that kind of stuff, but I would still, you just made a lot of time for music because it was the was always my biggest thing.
Yeah. And it still is.
Yeah, for sure.
And when I first met you guys, I was like, you remind me of me when I was a kid. You know, I was like, I was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I still am to this day, even as an adult.
It matures, though. It's different as you get older.
I have a job, I have a family, but it's like every minute I get that's just me and an album, me and time to listen to something or watch a video. Like,
tweak what you're doing.
I dive in head first and just tune out the world. I'm totally with you. But growing up, talking about your father's CDs and stuff, what, as a child of that era, which is very interesting to me, you guys were so lucky that you got to grow up in a time where you had access to music that spanned four decades or even longer, depending on how far back you went. But let's say you're listening to the rock and roll from the late 40s all the way up to 2000.
Mm.
You had it all right in front of you,
it
right?
It was all there. I was like, even the stuff we make fun of was there. Like, it would be like George Thorogood stuff that you're like, you have a bit of jab at it. But
if you don't listen to the hits on the radio, it's usually some good stuff in there.
That's what
I mean. So you could go on for hours about every band in the world, but what stood out to you to this day that you think back and go, I loved listening to this band or this record. Like, name off some stuff that really made an impact on you to become the musician you are.
The big, I would say, for me as a player, what really got me to be, like, I want to be a bass player. Mm-hmm. Like, I always wanted to be a bass player, but it wasn't like I had that drive to be the best bass player. I was like, I could be Mike Dirnt. I could strum along to some Green Day songs to be
Mike's
happy.
Mike's a pretty badass bass player.
Yeah, right? he's got some tools. But when he plays in that band, you see where he's laying back on some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But
he plays for the song.
Yeah, it's great. But it was really like Flea was that launching point. And then from there, I got into Led Zeppelin when I was in like fifth grade and Guns N' Roses. And that led me into Alice in Chains, which I think Alice in Chains, not Alice in Change. I don't know who that would be. But
well, those happen to me all the time.
I know. Those 40
I love listening back to these. And I'm like, God, I'm an idiot. I really, really don't think things out. My mouth opens.
I know. I promised my mom I wouldn't make myself look like too much of a horse's ass.
Well, we still got plenty of time.
Yeah, I know. I've already done plenty of it. Alice in Chains.
You just mentioned those bands. You're talking about Mike Starr, Mike Inez, you're talking about Duff McKagan, you're talking about Flea.
Great bass players, but I didn't think of them as great bass players because I just love the music. Like, I love Lane Staley's
musically
voice.
Musically, love the music, but as a bass player or an aspiring bass player, you looked at those guys as inspiration.
Like, Wood was a mind blower. I was like, there's a song where the bass
starts
is the thing starting it, and it's the only thing that's given the groove throughout the entire verse.
Right.
The guitar comes in with like two chords,
just following the vocal line. You want to hear something cool?
So cool.
The first time I heard that song was before singles had been released as a movie and before Dirt had come out.
Yeah.
I saw them on the Facelift tour, and they played Wood.
Oh, fuck you.
And before they played it, Lane goes, we're going to play a new song for you guys. And it was Wood. And you know how I know this? I recorded the show. I had a little tape recorder that I took to Starwood Amphitheater, and I recorded them. And I don't have the tape anymore.
Oh, damn.
But I recorded the show, and I wrote it down.
You could sell it on
and
eBay
I had a set
for so
list,
much.
But I wrote down the set list because I didn't know what that song was. For years, I had new song question mark. And then when singles came out, I found that's that song that they
that's
played.
The one. Yeah.
And it was Wood.
That's so cool.
So how cool is that?
That's really neat. That's a great way to find a song.
It was really cool. But like you, when I first heard It's So Easy by Guns N' Roses, I thought the same thing. I was like, that's the bass. And that's
that
cool.
Thing, that
that's a cool
little thing.
Thing
he's doing. Yeah. I'm like, the way that he would hit those strings, it sounds like he's almost playing a new...
See, my brother and my cousin were both bass players, like full-time. They noodled on guitar. Mike was a good guitar player, my cousin Mike. But my brother Brad and my cousin Mike both were full-time bass players. So I grew up in a house of bass, you know. So a lot of bass stuff stood out to me. And I'll never forget when I first saw Guns N' Roses on MTV was a live concert from the Ritz. And they opened with It's So Easy. Yeah. And I was like, that is bad to the bone. So the more I learned about Duff McKagan as I've gotten older, that's the coolest dude on earth.
That dude, yeah. He's
incredible.
I think he set the standard for what is now like modern bass playing and rock music.
Right. And if anyone just knows him as Guns N' Roses bass player, you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
You need to read about his past. Like, his came from Seattle. Like, he had a punk history behind it. Such a cool
story.
Such
a well-versed musician, too. Like,
but
plays with anybody he can gel.
That's
awesome.
What pointed you in the direction of bass? Because you're a stellar bass player. You're a real bass player.
Yeah.
You did not pick up guitar and fiddle with it for 2 years. And
well, the thing
I mean, I know you
like
probably played on it, but
it was like, it was almost like when we were kids, we were just so caught up in the, like, we're going to be in a band. So we're like, we have to plan ahead of this. We're thinking in a year, we need to have guitars and we need to be ready to play.
Right.
Like, for some reason, we thought we were going to have just an audience for a bunch of...
They just show up.
Yeah. And I was like, we used to talk about, like, we'll have kids over to the basement to watch us play and, like, all this stuff. We would talk about it and never go through with it. But we would get together, and my brother was the other guitarist, and Will had learned guitar, so I'm like, they're like, we need a bass player, and they're like, nobody, there's nowhere else to find a bass player. We'll find a drummer, or we used to like set up drum tracks, because we were like, we can't find any kids who could play drums to what we're trying
to
do.
It's a common problem.
Yeah, it's hard to find 8-year-olds who are playing what you want to play.
That's true.
But, yeah, that's really what happened, and I just fell into that role. But
did did you like it, or did you just do it because you weren't forced to it?
I fell in love with bass the first time I picked up. Will had gotten a bass before I even did.
Okay,
the kid down the street got the bass before I did, and I remember I picked it up, and he's just like, "Give this a try," and he's like trying to show me how to use. He used his thumb, and that's how I played for a long time,
right,
until I learned more of like finger style, and now I use
more like the sting way of playing.
Yeah,
like the down strike
with a thumb. Yeah. And he was playing like that, and I just learned from him. But the first time I picked it up, I was like, "Yes, this is the one."
Cool.
Because I had been playing on guitars, and I had been like playing single notes, like I was playing a bass.
Right.
I was like, "This sounds so thin."
But you never really aimed to be a guitar player.
No, I never. It was
so that's
always
why
a bass.
You like, are knighted a true bass player.
I was like, it's so funny. My uncle and I give shit because he's also a bass player. Oh. And he's like, you are the one person on the planet who set out to be a bass player. He's like, every other dude is a failed guitarist.
Failed guitar player, that's true.
Who became
a
bass player.
I'm a failed drummer that's playing bass now.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, that one's got to hurt. Nah, I'm kidding, man.
I like falling backwards. But you are a true bass player, my friend.
Yeah,
and you just not only listed some great bands to grow up listening to, obviously the entire catalog that was out there. Mm-hmm. And by mentioning just those few, like you said, musically speaking, band speaking, classic great stuff, especially of the time. But those bass players of those bands.
Sick. They're great.
And you know, a lot of people don't, you know, they're used to seeing Mike Inez. But let's not give. We got to give credit where it's due. Mike Starr played bass on Facelift, Sap, and Dirt.
In most of its finger style stuff, that sounds.
But he was Alice in Chains' original bass player on the first three releases.
Yeah.
So Mike Inez is on Jar of Flies and everything after that. So if you know your Alice in Chains, you know what we're talking about.
I have them all.
But I'm just saying, anybody listening. But that's the true thing, and you know, Mike Starr was an incredible bass player.
Yeah.
And Mike Inez is also an incredible bass player.
Yeah.
And they had very similar hair, and they look kind of alike if you look at a picture wrong. But it's kind of interesting. But those are great influences right off the gate to look up to.
And they sneak in on you because, like, I was listening to songs where it's like Man in the Box, and the vocals are so crazy and out there that you're not even thinking about the way that dude's punching the strings in between to keep the beat. You're not thinking about these little techniques you're picking up that are just a feel thing and that you might not know unless you're learning the song. And
it just came natural to them.
And it's not like with Flea and with Zeppelin, it was like those bands are already so stacked up, so they're intimidating to try and learn.
Yeah.
And when I was a real little kid, I was like, okay, I'm not going to touch that for a minute. I would be like, I don't want to learn Zeppelin. That's not cool. And then you get older and you play and you learn the bands that the guys you look up to learn from. And you're like, I want to learn how to do that.
Right.
But you just gain those techniques. Like, I think it's the craziest story is like when we're 13 years old in the Fashion and we decide we're going to learn Spoon Man by Soundgarden, which is a song that's in like 7/8 timing or something weird.
It's hard to play.
Yeah, it's a difficult song for like good musicians.
In general, yeah.
Good musicians who can go up there and play Mustang Sally on a Saturday night, they'd have a hard time with Spoon
Man.
That
damn song. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. And we're like 13. I'm like 13 years old, Ben's like 15, Sven's 15, and we're like, no, we're going to learn how to do this. Kendrick is like 13 at the time.
Wow.
And we go up and we're playing talent shows and we're playing at Wawa's, we're playing Spoon Man, we're learning Your Time Has Come by Audioslave, which was Chris Cornell's band after Soundgarden, and just really big into those guys.
You guys today in Monday Nation, when you do play live, you're pretty good about going to the 90s selection. Now, most bands your all's age, your peers and stuff, play 90s songs, early 2000s.
Yeah.
And they kind of pick the same old thing, which is easy to do. It's easy to do. You guys go above and beyond.
We go for the hard stuff.
It's not only the hard stuff, it's the good stuff. Like, you guys.
Yeah, that's how we felt about it.
Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, Rage Against the Machine. But you also throw in, Tool, but you also throw in the goods that influence those bands, which would be Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin. You do all these things
occasionally.
So well.
We'll throw in our cover of Voodoo Child. Then take a break from absolutely fucking blistering vocals.
He's quite a singer.
But the stuff we ask him to sing, man. Like, who are you going to ask to go sing Led Zeppelin, Chris Cornell, Layne Staley in one
him.
Night?
Yeah. You ask him, because he can do it.
I'm convinced.
I've witnessed it.
I'm convinced.
Off stage.
The only reason I play out anymore is just to watch Sven sing.
He's a phenomenal guy. You're in a damn good band, dude. You know that. How do I get to this next point?
Just go for it. Abrupt change.
You have really put, all of that in perspective. You're growing up, your influences, getting to where you are. When you've got your first bass that was yours, you owned it.
Christmas.
Was it a Christmas
present?
Yeah,
it was a Christmas gift when I was 10 years old. I would have been in fourth grade.
Okay.
And this
what'd you get?
Well, what's funny is we had been begging my mom for a bass. That was actually what we asked for first, because Will had a guitar. So we're like, Ben can play Will's guitar.
Okay.
So we needed a bass. And my mom's like, what do the kids want a bass for? And then she's like, all right, I'll get you a guitar. She got Ben like the cheapest.
Kids don't ask for basses for.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, my mom got Ben like a cheap Epiphone Les Paul starter, just guitar, just a hunk of wood. We used to call it the cinder block because the thing weighed 800 pounds. No matter what you did, thing couldn't stay in tune. Yep. Ben broke the bridge when we were kids, and my dad made a wooden bridge at the bit at the end, not the bridge.
Oh, the nut. Yeah.
But he made that, and it stayed in tune better like that than did with the original one. And
that goes to show that you can buy the shittiest thing out there
and learn how to play.
Well, learn how to play, but you can do mods to it and make it better.
Yeah, but
it's easy to do.
My gear was a little bit better. I still play my original bass that I got, which was the Squire.
Right.
It was a precision bass. I got a
Squire. You have a Squire P, and you also have a Fender P,
and it came with the Rumble 100 bass amp, which I now use for like a speaker at parties, and it doesn't quite live up to my Bluetooth speaker.
But you started out on the Fender P.
Yeah.
And excellent choice.
On the Squire.
Squire Fender.
There.
Squire by Fender.
This is the thing, is like later on I got my second bass, which was the Fender P bass.
Yes.
And once you play that, you're like, a Squire isn't a Fender.
They're similar, but I know what
there's
you mean.
There really is.
The necks feel different to me.
Yeah, that's great.
But that's what you have stuck with.
Yeah,
and you're loyal to the P bass.
Yeah,
setting.
They're nice.
I too do not care much for the jazz bass. I think they feel funny. I had one at one time.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what you got, and obviously you've been with it ever since. Once you got that, did it just take off? Do you literally play daily? I mean, you just said earlier you played for hours before you went to school. I'm sure the minute you get home from school,
you're just
constantly playing.
At this point, it's become a crutch. Like, I need it. Like, my girlfriend will get pissed off at me. She's like, you need to go play music because you're getting all bitchy. And I'll go sit in a room by myself for a minute. I'll be playing with bass.
You know
I'll
what,
be like,
dude?
Hey, come listen to this. And she's like, shut up. I've listened to like
a
thousand
things. There's
a
lot worse things you could do. So good for you.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's a good habit to have.
I just think, like, with music, it was always such a big part of my daily life from such a young age.
Right.
And it's always been there. And now if I go a couple days without playing, I get itchy. I get like I have to. And
I get that.
Even playing out, I get itchy. Like, playing in the basement is one thing, but in playing with the guys is the other one. I'm like, to get in a room and actually play with them,
right?
I'm like, I'm always like, hey, when can we jam? Because we all live pretty busy schedules, so it's hard to get them all together once in a while.
It gets better as you get older.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. gets harder. Yeah. But you know what? Right. You'll be the type to make you'll always make time for it. So there's no worry about that. But anyway, you have been a rock solid bass player for a good part of a decade or more now.
Yeah.
Correct? It's, you got it when you were 10.
And I just
turned 21.
Started playing at 8 is when Will got his bass even. Okay. And so I've been playing. I'm 21 now, so that's
a while.
It's a while.
Long enough to be good.
I don't
want to
make the people do the math.
But Sven had an episode of the Sound Atlas. If anyone goes back to look for Sven Dugangia, he's got an episode. He talks about how the band formed. And you kind of already touched on that a little bit earlier.
Oh, yeah.
With the first formation of something. When it did evolve into Mundane Nation, you've had that name for a while.
That one's been like the last 4 years. That's what I call every band before that, like the kids' rendition of what was leading up to it. Because it's always been Ben, Sven, and I. We've always played together. The drummers have rotated.
Right.
It's moved around. But those three were really the root. But that's when
the three of you found the comfort zone and the camaraderie thing
I think the part that Sven left out is when we were kids and we ended up having beef because we're 15 years old and you're going through changes in life, so you're like, no, I want to play this style. Sven was more of like a metal guy when we were young. He'd like some bands that we thought were really lame and we're like, we don't want to play that.
Go ahead, name some.
Oh, he's a big like Avenged Sevenfold fan, and I'm not.
Oh, see, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, I'm not like a huge fan of those guys, and he wanted to play
I
more
thought you were
going to
say something like The Scorpions or some 80s metal stuff.
He wasn't so much into the 80s metal as like what I call the newer age of 80s metal, which is the modern metal that's kind of mixed in with the rap.
Would that be new rock? No, that's not new rock.
It's kind of like new metal, but it's like the really bad end of new metal. Like not even
hair
like
metal
the corn
without
stuff.
The hairspray.
Yeah, it's... It's just, I don't know.
But
it's not
but
my
at
cup
some,
of tea.
At some point along
like
the way,
it.
You are kids, you're teenagers, you're growing up, but you're finding your way.
Yeah.
And you've landed where you are today because of all the stuff you all went through.
Yeah.
You obviously found common ground musically.
I think, but the final rendition of the band where we got together and started playing came out of Sven started playing acoustic stuff, and then he's like, man, I really miss being in a band.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm going to go ahead. And I'm like, dude, I've been begging you to come out. And Trey Farley almost ended up being the singer for Mundane Nation when we were starting, because there was a guy named Isaiah Coit who I went to high school with, and he was a drummer.
He's an excellent drummer.
Yeah.
And now he's in the Army.
And I met him through a friend in track named Jack Broaddus, and we played a talent show at South Warren together with him and played Alive by Pearl Jam where Ben sang. And we were getting together, and after we played that talent show, Ben and I were like, we kind of want to have a band again. Yeah. And we hadn't had one for a couple of years because we broke up as kids and then got back together, and we were still playing music. Like, we'd go out and jam at bars, but we
kids
finally,
jamming in bars.
Yeah, yeah, but we're like, all right, we're going to jam with Isaiah. And then Ben was talking to Sven, and they were hanging out as friends again. But he's like, let's get together, and you come sing for us. And Trey had just gotten busy with a show, so he didn't get to play this little talent show in Berea that we got together to start Mundane Nation up for. And that was when we got together, and we played that show, and we didn't know what we were going to do with the band. We just played covers. And
you're finding your way. And
we're just getting together. We didn't even know if we were going to play another show. We're just like, we did this thing.
Yeah.
And we didn't even have a name when we played it. And there were just all these people like, why are these guys playing it in Berea? I still have a video. I'll show it to you sometime because it's hilarious.
But the band eventually does become a band.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the name. And I know he told this story, but tell it again. What year did you nail all this down, and who was the original drummer?
It would have been, for Mundane Nation, it would have been in, I want to say, 2014, 2013, somewhere
sounds
in there.
Because I think I saw you guys
and it was Isaiah in 2014. Isaiah Coit was the first Mundane Nation drummer, but we only played the one show with him. And then he had some other stuff come up, and it was just hard
I saw
to get
you guys
time with him.
Not long after that, because I ran sound for you at mm-hmm. Dublin's.
You saw us when we had Ian.
Yes, Ian.
Ian Crow, which he now lives in Lexington.
Yeah.
Great drummer.
Unbelievable drummer. He was awesome, the guy.
He was an anomaly because we found him. He was just playing at the blues jams, and we had been looking for a drummer after Isaiah had become busy, and we're like, all right, we need to be able to play out a little bit more and do that kind of stuff. So Sven went and saw him, and he's like, all right, let's get this guy. He had never played in a band before, had never done any of that.
That's crazy.
He shows up at our house, and he's just in, like, basketball shorts, comes down there. I'm like, he hasn't said a word. He's looking down at the ground. I'm, like, not even, like, really paying attention to us. And we're like, all right, we're going to play this riff for Outshined, and we start playing Outshined, and he's like, okay, and he finds the timing, and he just learned the beat. Ben showed him the beat, like, once, and the kid just picked it up, and he learned a four-hour set list for a show in a week. And goes up there and plays it perfectly at Brewcomb when it was open, and they were playing bands there. And that guy, I still miss him. I'm not in contact with him now. It's been a couple of years.
He was good.
He was a good guy.
The first time I saw you guys, he was your drummer.
Yeah.
And I think I saw, I'm not sure if the order is correct, but you played at the Spillway.
Yeah. The Battle of Bands.
The Battle of Bands. I was a judge in that.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all were good, but you didn't win.
Yeah, apparently. Not good enough.
Well, you know, there were 10 bands.
No.
But you all stood out to me. And the reason why is because I think that happened first. And then a few weeks later, I'm filling in for Todd Hogan at Dublin's running sound while he's out doing shows with Despite the Fallen. And you guys were on the bill to play one of those particular nights that I was there. And I was blown away because at the Spillway it was limited. You had five songs, maybe. It was very, very brief.
I think
right?
I remember the set. It was Slither. Like we played Slither, yeah. Man in the Box, and Bulls on Parade because we wanted Ben to do the scratch solo.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought you played an original too.
Not at that one. We were playing originals at the time, but we played them at Dublin's.
Okay, that makes sense.
But that Battle of the Bands,
we knew
it was going to be like a cover win.
So. The night you all came to Dublin's, it was like, oh, I remember these guys, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you were talking just a few years ago, but you were kids.
Yeah.
You know, you were still in high school.
I was 17, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we were playing tip-balls.
I love that,
17.
Too, because when I was your age at that point, I was playing at... you know, Baker Street, and so I had this, like, you know, nice little flashback memory from being, oh man, I wish I was 17 again. But it was really cool to see you guys rolling in there, because I was like, these guys really care about what they're doing, and they get it. They really get what they're doing. So you came into Dublin's. Dublin's is a venue where you literally play a 3-hour set.
Yeah,
I think with DJ stuff.
Back then we routinely.
And so you come in, you played quite a few covers to start off the show, and then you go. Sven was like, "This is one of ours." You launched into an original, and this happened throughout the night. You would play like three covers and then an original, three covers and original.
Yeah, we like to space
and
them out.
I was blown away because the crowd never left the floor.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell if it was your song or some new band I've never heard of that sounded like new songs of today.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And that was with Ian.
Yeah.
On drums. The next time I saw you, Jake Ritchie was playing drums for you.
Yeah, Jake's my dude.
So Jake came in after Ian had to leave, I guess, right?
Yeah, Jake came in. Well, what happened with Jake, he had seen us play... at a bar, we played the Spillway with him, and he was playing with, it was either Uncle Jack or another band at the
Probably
time.
Probably Uncle Jack.
Or it was,
Wasn't something else, wasn't he?
Yeah, wasn't it like St. Mayhem or was that
No,
another?
Jake wasn't in that one.
It's, I can't get names straight ever.
It's okay.
But he was playing in a band, and we watched him, and we're like, that guy can fucking drum.
Yeah.
Like, we were like, he's riffing on Ian Sayre, and he's like, yeah, he's going. And then it had happened just a couple of months later that Ian had quit the band after a show, and we're like, all right, I got to start looking for drummers. I just sent Jake a message. I was like, hey, we have some shows that we've been offered. Do you think you could fill these dates? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I know you don't know us, and we're just some kids who played out, and you saw our band. He's like, no, that's really cool. And he was excited to work with us, and he invited us over to his house, and we went over to Jake's house, and he learned all our songs mm-hmm. and learned our set, and we just started playing. And it was never like Jake's in the band now, but we just kept doing that yeah. for like a year or
the longest
more.
Fill-in ever
yeah. But I never felt like I was like, Jake, you're in the band now, or Jake, you're not in the band. We were right. just playing, and he was like, all right, you guys need to record some songs,
right?
And he's like, you need to consider doing this. And the original plan was just to do like maybe two or three, maybe five at the most.
Just to get something out there.
And we just got started, and Jake and everybody we were just excited, and we're like, you know what, this is kind of cool. We're doing something, and we're just sitting in a basement and like goofing off, and in between we'd be making jokes. And that was probably about 9 months after we'd been playing with Jake that we did that.
And that became your album,
yeah,
Primal
that,
State.
That was the album.
Which is the only album Mundane Nation's put out so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, 9 months ago.
Oh, it was like, only about a
yeah,
year
yeah, it's
ago.
Only been
okay.
like 9 months.
That's crazy. It doesn't
like,
seem like
you
that.
You guys expect so much from us. You're like, where's my fucking
well, what's
new
weird
music,
about
man?
It is Jake was involved with you guys for a while, playing the shows, as like fill-in shows, but he also stuck around, helped your originals come to life, get recorded, mm-hmm. helped make the record. He recorded yeah. that album.
Jake... I can't say it enough. Jake is the best dude I know, because he brought in a bunch of goofball, like 20-year-old guys into his house and put up with our bullshit and joking around and just whatever so that we could make some music together.
Well,
and
because he
just,
knew, he saw the talent.
Yeah, but even if you see talent, I'm like, talent isn't sitting, like Jake sat around and mixed that album and would spend hours on it. I was like, the last bit of it, we would come over and he would have like a bag of like sweet cereal. He's like, I get a sweet tooth when I'm making it. It's just like clawed open, and it, like if you've ever done any like work on an album, it is frustrating.
It's like making
and
a movie,
time consuming.
Yeah, it's extremely.
Your ears get tired. Everything gets tired. Yeah. And Jake did a big lick of that whenever we were recording it, because he had the experience and we yeah. didn't. And he took the time to show us things that we didn't know.
Right.
And
again, I think he thought it was worthy.
Yeah, but
because he knows that 20 years from now you'll look back on that.
Well, he used to
and
he used
really
to be
appreciate
like,
it.
He hung our album on his wall, like he did his album that he did with Gear, or mm-hmm. the tracks that he did with Gear back yeah. in the 90s. That he said
yeah.
that was the band that we always reminded him of, and I think he had a lot of pride in
I
that
get
project.
That. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so I think.
Well, you got to remember back when you were babies. I mean, Gear was a big deal
yeah.
around here. They were one of the hottest bands in
the
state.
I'm like, I'm just now starting to get to hear about this yeah. kind of stuff from guys like Ricky Hodges and
yep.
from like you and
yep.
Jake. And it's cool to hear the history of that stuff.
Well, it's a great town. It's a great history of music, that's for sure. And you guys are part of it modern day.
Oh, fuck.
But Jake helped the band really come together.
He gave us
recording your own songs.
We had planned to do some recordings when we had Ian, but we hadn't like set a definite
right.
schedule. It was all floating in the air. And then with Jake, it was more like he's saying we're going to do this in his basement,
yeah.
and he's already set
like
up the
made
room.
You do it.
Yeah, he made us do it because we knew that it
well,
was going to be an endeavor.
It was a sense of pride on his end. He wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, and we had tried.
That's
to
some
do,
of Jake's
like, we did,
finest
we
drumming.
Did, yeah, he did.
It's
a great
good
job.
Stuff
because like,
I had to learn it.
You had to learn
I had
it.
To
yeah,
film.
You filled in
as
for
soon
us.
As that record came out. Jake was like, I can't do this. Like. Full
was,
time, you know.
He had just had some other obligations. He's
right.
got kids.
But,
and,
I mean, again,
yeah.
there's a 20-year age gap between you guys and Jake, and the same with me. But
yeah,
I was able
hobbies,
to...
Man.
I was in a position where I could help, mm-hmm. and you guys, in the same scenario, like, we got some shows, and we need a drummer. And I stepped down and helped you guys play some shows. I had to learn Jake Ritchie's drum parts
yeah.
off of that record to play those shows.
There's this one fill in Primal State,
yeah.
the song, where he does the kick drum thing. And we Ben and I, when we were doing the mixing for the album, he's like, listen to this and give me feedback on this, take notes and all this shit. He's like, wow, is like the note that he wrote for that film. And I'm like, yeah, that one's mind blower.
That is pretty cool.
Jake's super talented drummer, too.
It's like, amazing. He's a great guy, and he's a great drummer. Yeah. And you guys should be very happy with
the
outcome.
Yeah, I hope we get to play another show.
Not only you got to work with him, he was technically in the band.
Yeah.
And he's on that record.
It was never said, but he was the unspoken
He is permanently
member.
On that record.
Yeah. I
Can't
think,
deny
in
it.
My opinion, like, I Jake's a permanent member of the band, in my opinion.
I agree.
I put him on the list.
Sorry, Jake. You're still in the band.
Yeah, you're in the band, man. You can't escape it.
But but like you're saying, Primal State's your only album for Mundane Nation. It came out about a year ago.
Yeah.
It was recorded and pretty much engineered and produced by Jake Ritchie.
By four guys. Yeah.
Well, yeah, obviously you guys are...
Ben worked with it.
Okay.
Ben did some work. We all...
You're all involved.
I didn't do as much on the technical side. I mostly played bass.
I'm the idiot that thinks wherever it was recorded is who did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously it was a band effort.
Sven made the album artwork and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's a really good record, man. You guys should be very proud of that.
Man.
It is available at Mellow Mass Music and More.
Yeah, I dropped off some copies there.
But it's also obviously online. The normal places people would
streaming.
And Mundane Nation can be found on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
And
I
you
don't
guys
keep up with the Insta as much,
well,
but
you know,
Facebook mostly.
You got the Insta Nation. But you guys are a very powerful in the moment band of this Bowling Green music scene.
Appreciate that, man.
What is it like for you to get those calls from when John Tidball calls you and says, "Hey, I got this band coming, and you're perfect for an opening act." Like,
it's,
you guys get a lot of calls from the local venues that
look
to you as a perfect fit for that show.
Well, it wasn't always like that. When we first started playing, it was like Bruco was the only place we would play out before it closed down, because the guy was literally Sven's neighbor and he had to go knock on his door to get that gig. Like, it was hard because people didn't know us. I would message like Todd Hogan and I'd be like, "Hey man, I got this band, but I'm just like this 16-year-old kid."
Yeah.
He's like, "What the fuck? Why am I getting messages from a 16-year-old kid?" I understand it. And then once we started playing Bruco, it was like, okay, doors are open, and Dublin's invited us to go play there on another set, and they loved us, and they've always supported us and brought us in there. We were playing every weekend, and then for a while we were playing the Spillway that much, because we were allowed there until we got banned, unfortunately. But
damn it.
Yeah. It's. I'm like, we don't hold any grudges.
We'll blame Jake.
Since he wasn't in the band, it was the drummer's fault.
Nah,
if he was in the band, it might have been different. But
you guys have been, in my opinion,
no grudges,
a pretty dominant factor of this music scene as of lately, as of modern day.
Appreciate it, man.
I mean, you can't deny it. I mean, you've built a really good fan base, and I know you guys have traveled out of town and done some other stuff, to be a Bowling Green based band. I think you should realize that the music scene has taken notice of you guys and has reached out to you on many occasions to do shows with. And on that topic, who are some of the bands you have worked with that you're proud to call friends and partner up with?
Well, I would say like the biggest band that helped us out when we were first getting started was Despite the Fallen.
Yes.
Cody saw us... I can't remember
Johnny?
Where he first saw us play. It might have been opening.
Be Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny. I don't know what whatever you people know, Cody, Gabe, or Johnny Walker, whatever
it's
his
funny.
Name.
Todd did the same thing.
Oh,
like,
man.
You're talking about Johnny, right?
I have no idea who we're talking about anymore. Cody,
the lead
you need
singer
to figure it out, man.
Despite the Fallen.
Yeah. The person who was formerly known as the lead singer of Despite
yes.
the Fallen.
Yes.
There you go.
The tall guy that sings.
That tall, nice guy who I love very
He's
much.
A very nice guy.
Nah, but they gave us a crack at it. I remember Cody was like, "I watched you guys, and I just fucking hated your guts." And he's like, you guys were all up there playing. And he's
You're
like,
amazing band.
And he's like, I watched you. And he's like, I have to go up there and play after those guys. And from then on, we were just buddies.
Oh, that old thing.
And we love supporting Despite the Fawn. They're one of the best bands I know. They're all great guys.
They're great.
And they have a big
show. And they've
gone through
a lot of stuff, yeah. But they've kept it together. So
they
hats off to them.
They have a big show coming up in Nashville at the Rocket House.
Oh, yeah.
At Rocket Town that yeah. People need to go to see that.
Are you all planned for that? Are you
no,
opening
I'm
that?
Not even on the bill, and I want people
well,
to go
should
see
be.
It.
You really should be.
Should be, could be, would be. You know, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But love those guys. And then we played with Memory. Those guys are great.
Yeah.
We've played with Kiss Kiss Bang a couple times so over the years. We'll be playing with them on Louisville, but not as much. And then Wolf Island Cosmonauts here
right.
lately.
I've seen always, you guys a few times with them.
Yeah, they're
that's a
they're
good pairing because I think musically speaking, original wise and cover wise, I think you're a good fit band wise. I mean, like for the evening, it's like a perfect blend of all those different styles.
Like I've talked to Cody about it too with Despite the Fallen because we've had Wolf Island Cosmonauts, Despite the Fallen, Monday Nation on the same bill.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's a great bill because
great
anybody
bill.
Who's going to that show for any of the other bands are going to be like, hey, I get this too. Or if you're not as into what that band's playing, hey, we got something else for you. It
right.
covers a large range of stuff. It's a good show, but
good
you're
show.
Never going to feel like it's a hipster band and then a hard metal band. It's all kind of around the same area.
Right. I get that.
But
while we're on that topic... And I know there's others, but I just knew
yeah.
I knew those were the ones you were going to spew
yeah,
out real quick.
I know that. You know
but
that.
You're going to probably mention all these names all over again and maybe more.
And then the one other one I want to touch on that is like our out-of-state
oh, yeah.
is Chout. Chout.
Yeah.
Chout. If you haven't checked them out, if you're an Alice in Chains head or you just
And they're from Chicago,
them,
right?
Yeah, they're from Chi-Town. They came Chi-Town. They came down to play...
Chout-Town.
Yeah, Chout-Town. That's what they should call it. they came down to play in Louisville with us. Probably it was right after the album came out, so probably about 7 months ago.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
and
that.
Just, it was a great fucking show.
Yeah.
Those guys are great musicians. You need to look them up and check them out.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get to play with them again soon. I still talked to Matt about doing it. But yeah, all those bands.
Well,
are
we're
really
gonna
cool.
flow into this awesome question, which I love to throw at everybody. Being involved in this music scene as a fan. Who are you into, and who is influencing you as a musician?
In the area?
Yeah,
yeah.
I know you're kind of like me. You're in a band and you do your thing, but you're
yeah,
also
I
really
try and check it
a
out.
Big fan. You go out and see not just your friends' bands or bands you
no, like
obviously
artists.
Like, which is the ones you've just mentioned, but you're a fan of this music scene. You go out and support it.
I love music when it comes from an honest place. Like mm-hmm. that's I went and saw Trey Farley at Dublin's the other night, and I told him, and I hope he's okay with me telling this story because I'm like we're cool dudes and he's a good fan. but Trey was playing, and I was like, you would lose me at spots in your set because he would play like Chinese chicken, it's just like.
Oh, that's the
knockoff kind of like acoustic stuff, and then he played this original song that was just a fucking heartbreaker, like brought a tear to my eye live in music. And I'm like, hey, Trey, you need to do more of that and go out and see that. And I love seeing groups where I can go, and I'm always that bastard who's sitting over in the corner judging you hard, like you know it. it's like what all musicians do when they see somebody else play; they're watching them like hawks and going, "Ah, I could do that better" or whatever. But you appreciate things, and when I see something that's good like that, you know, you just gotta admit
it.
And I've seen
it.
Cody go out and play, or Johnny, or whatever you want
to
call
Cody Johnny,
the former singer, or the formerly known as.
Oh, he's still the singer.
Yeah, still the singer of Despite the Fallen. We love you. And I've seen Despite the Fallen. The new Memory stuff is great.
Yeah,
I feel
Which
like
we,
they've stepped
you and
up.
I both just witnessed that last week.
I feel like they've stepped up. Big notch.
They really did. They went from a three-piece to a five-piece,
and it brought
really,
a lot of energy to them.
Really amped it up.
Yeah, it's
a
good
lot.
Stuff, man. We got a good scene here.
It's a good scene.
Yeah.
Who are you a fan of? Aside from the bands that you've already listed, who else out there?
Those are the big ones in town. I also like the Black Gold Music guys. Yeah, I always say Black Gold Music, because that's what I have to look up on Facebook to find their page.
It's either band or music.
But they're young guys, and
that's a good band that I think you guys.
I've been trying to get on a bill with them. Yeah. I've been trying to get on a bill with them because I think with their age, they also had a hard time getting into places like we did when we were first playing.
True, and so I think the energy that both
Black
Gold and Mundane Nation for anyone listening,
the two
needs to put these bands on the same bill.
We'll get.
I think Black Gold and Mundane Nation belong together on a stage because. The energy level that both of you guys put off is equal. Like, it's right on par. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so that's good stuff. So that's cool, man. That's a question I like to throw out there.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of bands that you could throw on that, too, you know? But I'm always curious to see what other people are into, you know? But I just know you're a strong supporter of this music scene. But you're also a really strong fan of certain bands and people that have helped you along the way, but you're just like musically influenced by it.
Yeah, and I look around and I like a lot of, like, Luther is a cool band. I've heard them play, and Grandshaw, those guys are cool in Louisville. And I've met just a lot of great people through music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
you have.
That's another thing.
And that's how we met.
Yeah.
Through music.
I was like, I didn't know you. And then I was like, hey, can you play drums for the show? And you're like, yeah, I'll come over.
But I'm one of those. I can wing it.
Yeah, and you showed up, and I think we played like two songs in the basement, and then we're just bullshitting like we are now, and it was just storytelling.
This is weird to play. Like, I think one thing I first said to you was like, I wish I'd met guys like you when I was 20.
Which is what Jake said to us.
Like, there were a lot of good musicians in this area that were my peers, but a lot of them were lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I meet guys like you, and I'm like, what the hell?
We're driven. I was like, you could thank our parents for that.
Hardcore.
Yeah.
Well, your parents did good, and I'm speaking on behalf of you and your brother. You're both incredible musicians.
Appreciate it.
And even at this age, and to have been playing as long as I've played, it was a challenge to learn your all songs and be on level with you. It took a while to really get that, because you've got that brother connection, and it's hard to just kind of jump into that and get it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like you're paddling upstream.
The other thing, I'm like, we've been playing with Sven so long, and I played with Sven at such a young age. Yeah. I also have that with him. Like, dude, at the other night when you were there, because you guys opened up the night, and Sven's singing War Pigs, and he fucked up the line, and then
that's okay. Ozzy would have done it too.
Yeah, and he just on the spot makes up some lines that makes the crowd laugh. He's like, "I failed you as my crowd," and just perfect. I'm like, I need to post
a
video.
He's a great
dude. Just thinks quick on his feet. I look at him and I'm just smiling. I'm like, every picture you have of Sven where he looks awesome, it's just me looking at him and just like staring at him in all his magnificent hair, singing like a god.
He is the ultimate lead singer, that is for sure.
Yeah.
But your brother Ben, since he's not here, and I don't know if he'll ever do an episode.
Yeah,
amazing guitar player.
Ben is the dude who will never admit to you that he's the greatest guitarist that you'll
meet. He's great. He's if there was a list of great guitar players from our music scene, if he wasn't on the list, I would be angry. Because that means nobody knows him.
Album and tell me those aren't some of the most pissed off solos you've heard.
They're great.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal guitar player.
And the little licks he throws in there just change pace and song. I'm like, Ben might be the most... He's the guy, when we put a song together, he's like, no, this is why it works. I'm like, the rest of us can be like, hey, let's put this... Oh, that's really cool. Sven and I will be like, oh, that's really cool. And Ben's like, no, you morons. This is why it works. He's probably the best for it.
He's good, man. He's a good dude. You're in a good situation. But again, you guys have been a solid band for quite a while now.
Mm.
You're really, really dominant in the music scene as we are speaking at this time and place. At Spencer's Coffee House, by the way.
At Spencer's Coffee House.
What is on the horizon for Mundane Nation, and what do you see coming in the future?
We have a couple gigs coming up. Most of them I either can't talk about or
well, it doesn't they're matter, not on this the schedule airs yet. Much yeah. later than whatever.
Okay. And then, like, we got the Kiss Kiss Bang show coming up, and then we're planning on doing some travel and maybe going to Memphis, going to a couple areas around where we have...
So not maybe regional touring, but yeah, just but, maybe Weekend Warrior kind of
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, Weekend Warrior stuff. And then maybe on a long holiday, we're talking with Chout about maybe doing a little tour through
Sweet.
The South.
That's cool.
And we might even go all the way down to Florida if we get...
Hats off to those guys for, like...
Oh, they're
doing,
all, yeah,
doing
they're
that.
Awesome
like,
guys.
That's a good.
We always talk when I told Matt we're like soul brothers because yeah. they have like the same story. Kids growing up,
yep.
and then started playing music together. Got together when they were yeah. older, and I was like, I found their band through Corey Settles. Shout out to him.
Oh yeah,
he's got a new job at the tattoo shop. You need to go
yes,
see
he does.
Him. If you need a new tat, go see my buddy Corey.
But that's a good thing to find in a band is that partnership kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who work with us. And
yeah,
who,
it's really different really now than it used to be. We used to cut throats.
There's some throat cutters, but I don't like to talk about them.
It doesn't seem like that to me anymore. I don't see it. Maybe you guys do. The younger generation might, but
I've met them. It's
our
just
scene
that the,
seems more
the
together now.
The throat
cutting
is more like passive aggressive through Facebook now. It's just a lamer version of the throat cutting.
A lame
it's still
throat
there.
Cutter.
It's still there, but
well, Ed,
there's some good bands.
Is there anything I have missed? Is there anything you came into this wanting to talk about, or point out, or give shout outs to, or are we about wrapped up here?
It's like I always forget there at the end. No, we should have a music video coming up in the works.
Good.
Yeah, we've been talking about doing it, and then we got a bunch of shows that we booked up and overdid it.
And we have to give the shout out to Brandon.
Yeah,
at
Brandon
254 Productions.
Go,
right,
go just check out some of his work on those videos.
He's done some great work. Which, of course, all the memory videos he's done.
He's done for basically all of the groups around.
I'm trying to Bowling. Think. Yeah,
he's done basically all of the Kiss Kiss Bang, despite the Fallen's
right.
videos.
So he did do.
I think
Kiss
he
Bang
did Black Gold's
Fallen.
Videos too.
Really?
Yeah, I think he does them all, man.
See,
like,
I
he
talked to him
them.
Recently, but we didn't talk about the production stuff. We just talked about music.
Yeah,
I didn't really. I didn't get into the visual
the
topic.
I think he pushes the music stuff with the production stuff.
Yeah.
I always told him, like,
Which
I met with
sense.
Him for the video, and I was telling him about his band. I'm like, one of the big edges those guys have is he just has a great ability to put together advertising material, put together little yeah. clips for people, and post
well,
those.
Know,
and those
if
are
you can
helpful.
Do it, do it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But he does great work, and I think he's done about everybody's work in the area.
I would have to agree. I've seen a lot of good video work,
yeah.
and it always seems to have that
professional. It's
254
not, it's,
production.
It doesn't have that like cheesy, like small town kind of feel.
No, it's real most. Thing. I mean,
yeah,
they're
real
using
deal.
iPhones or.
Well, he was for our
they're
video.
They're using phones.
Yeah,
like,
for our video, he was talking about doing drone shots and stuff.
Yeah,
it's like very cool stuff.
It's amazing what can be done now. But when I was your age, we were thrilled if we had a giant VHS camcorder.
I know.
That's how we made video.
And you're like taping it to a skateboard to follow somebody around. Yeah. It's awesome.
Been
technology.
Been
man.
There. well, Ed, are you sure there's nothing I've missed? No,
I think.
No perfect question of music or anything musical related. I feel like I've asked the
not
same
so much.
Questions I always
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to everybody for listening to us, coming out and supporting us, and for all the bands and people who have helped us along over the years. Like,
not
Kent,
only are people helping you, but you all have helped out a lot of
try,
people, too.
We try to give back for, like, we've been
help
a
kids.
Lot of people. Like, Kent, who owns Dublin's, a lot of people know him by Hank, but
yeah.
He's been great to us. John at Titball has been mm-hmm. great to us. And the venue owners, I feel like they don't get enough of a shout-out either because they're the people who have some of these bands come in.
I try my yeah. best in every episode to yeah. make sure everyone knows it's more than just the bands and the...
I mean, even when we're, like, promoting shows, we're always like, these three bands on a bill. We're never like, this great bar, which yeah. the bottom of them are, man. They're cool places.
Yes, they are, and they're important.
Yeah, they are important. Keep it up, guys.
But you guys are doing great, and you've got a great... support system. You've had a great fan base. You've got a great bands behind you, rooting for you, and
yeah.
I can't say enough about Mundane Nation.
Got great fans. I'm like, you go look at any of our Facebook posts, you'll find the same people under there. They always have a good time. They check in with us. And
you guys have a really good thing going. Yeah. But Mundane Nation has the album Primal State.
It is out available on all platforms.
Yep. And obviously, locally speaking, you can get it at Mellow Matt's Music and More.
Mm-hmm.
But if Mundane Nation is on a bill and you've never seen this band, I want to personally recommend seeing them. Doesn't matter who. I've played drums. I've said this with Finn. I've played drums a few times with you guys just as fill-in work.
Three times now.
Something. I think three, four maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's three.
I think you came up and played it. The last show you
came
up and played
I've done some cool stuff, but... You guys are an incredible band, incredible musicians, and it's been an honor as a fan to watch you guys grow, and it's been an honor to be on stage with you and play with you guys because you're a great band to work with.
Thanks, man.
So keep doing what you're doing. Thank you for what you're doing, and keep it up.
You got it. All right.
I don't know how to end it. This is an awkward ending, but
Let's just make really weird small talk. And just filter this night out until it's like,
I'll end it with this. Since I am a full-time bass player now.
Oh, yeah.
I, too, play the precision bass.
Precision.
And I prefer it over the jazz bass or any other brand.
I'm right there with you, man. I was like, but the thing, I'll say this. P-bass that mixes jazz and precision bass, that's where it's at, man. Yeah. I have that. Never going back.
There you go.
If I had to get another bass, that's what it's going to be.
There you go. And that's the best way to end it.
That's how I end it.
Good night from Spencer's Coffee House.